My lesson tonight is a little bit different. Bringing this lesson to cause us to stop and really think. I announced it in the bulletin as standing by the casket. There is no work that anybody does on this earth in which he goes to the highest peaks of the mountain and the lowest depths of the valley any more than that of a preacher. I've been with people in some of the most wonderful occasions that they've ever had. When there is a birth, I'm usually involved being there. When there is a wedding, I get the opportunity to enjoy that celebration. I get to go and be with people when there are occasions that there are awards and very happy occasions. I've been with families to the highest peaks of the mountain. But I've also been with families to the lowest depths of the valleys. Last week, I was involved in two funerals. That made me 658 funerals in which I've been involved. I have stood by the casket or stood by the graveside as a husband, twice as a son, four times as a grandson. I conducted all the funeral services for my four grandparents and my parents and spoke at my wife's funeral. I have stood by the casket with families after family down through the years. Some of those have been easy and some of them have been tremendously hard. I remember one occasion, to just give you an idea of what's involved, when the funeral that I conducted was for a man who killed his wife, shot her 17-year-old son, and then killed himself. Now, it's not easy to know what to say when you have a situation like that. I have been there for funerals when there was a baby that had died. One year when I was in Carthage, I had eight baby funerals in less than a year, either born dead or died at birth or within the next few hours. I've had funerals for people of all ages. I've had four or five funerals for people who had passed the century mark. They were over 100 years old. And it is important to think about what happens when we have a funeral, when we're by the casket. In Acts, the 9th chapter, Tabitha, known as Dorcas, died. While she was living, and in reference to her life, she is talked about by name. But then it simply says that they washed the body and laid her in an upper chamber. And we find Peter coming and going in where the body was. What's left behind is referred to as a body. And I think that's significant. I want to share with you tonight some of the questions that have been asked of me as I have stood by the casket or as I've been involved in a funeral. And then I want to share with you the two most common statements that I've heard people in the family make. A general question that is asked, for which I do not have the answer and do not expect to ever have the answer, is why did God take my loved one now? I don't have the answer to that. I can quote to you Hebrews 9:27, that it is appointed unto man once to die, and after that the judgment. But I don't have the opportunity to know when that appointment is, and I don't have the opportunity to know why that appointment is at a certain time. As I look back now in the death of my wife, I think I can see some reasons that God took her when he did. I think he spared her from what would have been a tremendous period of suffering. But I don't have the answer as to why he decided at that time. I don't have the answer as to why God decided to take anyone that was a loved one of mine or a friend of mine. And I don't pretend to be able to give people an answer to that. This is especially difficult when there is an untimely death, maybe the death of a child or the death of an adult who seems to be in the prime of life and there's no illness, there's just an accident or there's a sudden death. And someone says, why did God take my loved one at this time? I don't have the answer to that, except that I can say and do say on every occasion, I believe that God knows what he's doing. I believe that God's thoughts are higher than my thoughts and his ways higher than my ways. There may be some things that there are some things that God sees in a way that I'm unable to see them. And so we have to strengthen our faith to believe that God knows what he's doing. Folks, get this point and remember it. Death is not the worst thing that can happen. Death is just as much a part of God's plan as life is. We associate life with positive things and we associate death with negative things. But sometimes death can be a relief in more ways than one. I have heard many, many people down through the years, older, faithful Christians, say, I'm ready to go. I wish God would go ahead and take me. Death is not the worst thing that can happen. It is the process of dying that's the real problem. And you'll have to think that through to really understand the impact of that. But we need to come to bring ourselves to realize that death is as much a part of God's plan as life is. God never intended for us to stay on this earth for an eternity. He intended for us to use this earth as a preparation time and a stepping stone, in a sense, to something that is much better. Those mansions that we were singing about a few minutes ago, where I have a mansion just over the hilltop, that's what it's all about. And it's not easy for any of us, even the finest Christian person, it's not easy for that person to put all that in focus and to understand it. But we do need to be able to understand that though we don't have the answers, that God knows what he's doing. Then there are four questions that I've been asked sometimes by children at a casket that are not easy to answer. One of them is, do you think my daddy's going to heaven? And that's usually asked when the person who has died had not lived the best kind of life. And there is a child, sometimes a younger child, who is hurting in ways that may be even hard for us adults to understand. And he looks up at me and says, do you think my daddy's going to heaven? That's one of the hardest questions I've ever had to deal with. And we have to realize that there is a heaven and there is another place, that God has prepared heaven for the righteous and the other place for the unrighteous. There are facts that are involved. And this is a time when we need to find comfort for people. And yet when one has passed away who's not a Christian and made no attempt to be a Christian, it's hard to find comfort. For a child, for example, that's lost a parent, or a spouse that's lost a husband or a wife, or whatever the situation may be. Do you think my daddy's going to heaven? And now turn that around in the other direction, and here's a question I've had adults ask me when the child had died. Do you think my child is safe? Perhaps someone, a child that's 13 or 14, or somewhere along there, maybe even earlier, has passed away. And we all know that there is safety with childhood, with being a baby in those early years of childhood. We believe that that child is safe in the arms of Jesus. And yet we believe somewhere along there comes a time when one is accountable to God and needs to become a Christian. And that time that's in between, when one leaves being safe in Christ and becoming a Christian, is one of the most difficult times in life, and it's a time maybe we don't think about as much as we should. That's why I encourage young people, don't obey the gospel until you understand what you're doing, but when you see the need of being a Christian and you understand basically what is involved, don't put it off another day. Because you and I know what can happen in life, how things can change so suddenly. And it's not easy when a parent looks at me out of grief as I'm standing with that family by the side of the casket and says, do you think my child is safe? And then a question that's somewhat related to these two that I've had asked more than once, do you think God has forgiven his sins? Or do you think God has forgiven her sins? And I'm not to set myself in a position of judgment. I'm not the judge, and I'm glad that I'm not the one that decides that. But if you stop and think about it, if a person would even ask that question, there has to be some doubt in one's mind as to whether or not one's sins were forgiven. Had a funeral not long ago of a person who had become a Christian in life and for the last several years had not been truly faithful as a Christian. That person had been baptized into Christ and being a Christian certainly had the right to pray to God, had the right to repent to God. That person was involved in a situation that put them into a coma. And from my standpoint and those who knew him, the person never came out of that coma. But there was some indication at one point at least that at least there was some movement of the eyes, there was some movement of the brain, there may have been some ability to think. We don't know. And so the question is asked, do you think that person had an opportunity to ask for God's forgiveness? And of course, the bottom line is, I don't know. And the other bottom line is, I don't want to become the judge. And this is where I emphasize that it's in the hands of God, and God knows beyond what we are capable of knowing. But here's what I would like to do. I would like to live my life in such a way that when I die, that my children will not have to stand by my casket and ask, do you think God forgave him his sins? If I can live in such a way that they know I'm constantly trying to let the blood of Christ take care of my sins, then when that time comes, that question will not need to be asked. We sometimes put our souls in jeopardy. God is a just God. God is a God of grace and mercy. And he'll do what is right. God is too good to do anything that's not right. And I'm thankful that he knows everything and can make these decisions and is capable above what I'm able to. But that's a hard question, folks, when somebody asks the question, do you think God forgave his sins? And the only answer that I have is that I'm not capable of answering that question. I'm sure that God forgave sins according to his will in this case or in any case. But these are hard questions. And then sometimes a question is asked, why would God send anybody to hell? And it doesn't take me long to answer that question. God doesn't send anybody to hell. God doesn't send anybody to heaven in the sense of forcing them to go in either direction. Now, God will make the final decision as to where we go and where we spend an eternity. And God has set up those guidelines. But you remember that passage that says, God is not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance? God doesn't want anybody to be lost. And if a person's lost, it's not God sending him to be lost. It's God dealing in justice according to the principles that he set up. But I'll tell you, folks, those are some hard questions that are asked. And the answer is not as easy as you might think until you face those questions. And somebody who is just almost overcome with grief at an occasion when we're standing by the casket or by the grave asks questions like that. Here's what we need to do. We need to think in terms of keeping our lives such that nobody would ever have to ask those questions. That we do not willfully put our souls in jeopardy. That we do not willfully live in a way that there's questions like this that can be asked. But live in such a way that when death takes place, all those who know us will look at the situation with hope. I cannot preach anybody into hell, and I cannot preach anybody into heaven. And I try to make it a policy, it is my effort to make it a policy, to never make the statement that this person has gone to heaven, but to talk about the hope and the reasons that we have to believe that that person will have an opportunity to be in heaven. I think we've got to be careful that we don't put ourselves into being the judge. And somebody will say, well, he preached that person right into heaven. I don't have the right to preach anybody into anywhere. Each one of us does that while we're living. But I'll tell you one thing. It's extremely nice and helpful to be able to conduct a funeral and everything in it be positive. and to say that from every indication that we have, we know the kind of person, the kind of life that was lived by this person. We know that there was obedience to the gospel in becoming a Christian. And everything that we have points to give us hope today that there will be a time when we can see each other again. And you and I need to live in such a way that one of these days when we leave this earth, and it's going to happen, that everybody who stands by the casket can think in terms of, this person lived a Christian life. This person prepared. And there's no question in my mind as to where that person will go. God will have the final decision. But there's no question to us as to what we think that final decision will be. Now, having talked about these questions, I want to talk with you for just a few minutes about one of two things that almost always is said sometime during the process of the funeral and leading up to it. Almost without exception, I've had one of these two things said by people. I wish I had, or I'm glad I did. And I'll guarantee you that when you lose a loved one, you will think, if not say, one of those things. Now, what's meant by that? Think about the one I wish I had. It's not unusual for someone to say, I wish I had told that person how much I loved them. I wish I had told them how much they meant to me. And we sort of sum that up by saying we need to give our flowers while they're living. But that's what we're saying when we say that. I wish I had done this. I wish I had done that. I wish I had told them this. Or I wish I had told them that. And then there's the other side of it. I'm glad I did. I'm glad that I got this for my loved one. I'm glad that I went with this loved one on a trip that she wanted to take. I'm glad that we had this time together. I'm glad that I told the person how much I love them. And that's been one of my problems down through the years. I don't express myself in some of these ways as well as other people do. But folks, we need to live toward one another in such a way that if something were to happen tonight and we never see a loved one again, that we can say, you know, I'm glad I did. There's not one of us that's perfect. I look back at the 50 years that Judy and I lived together, and there are some things that I would change. There are some things that I would do that I didn't do, and there's a little bit of a sense that I sometimes say, well, I wish I had done this, but basically speaking, I can honestly say to you that as far as the general life that we had together, I can say I'm glad I did. I can say I'm glad that I did when it came to being with her those last 87 days in the hospital, and the things that we talked about, and the things that we said to each other. And I'll tell you, that makes all the difference in the world. When you can basically say, and there's not a perfect situation on either of these sides, but you can basically say when you've lost a loved one, well, I'm glad that we had that life together. And I'm glad that I did these things instead of being able to spend your time saying, I wish I had. And there's only one way that you can be able to do that. Do something about it while you're living. Don't miss an opportunity to say thank you. Don't miss an opportunity to tell someone in the family or even a friend or a business associate how much you appreciate what they do. Don't miss that opportunity until it's too late. Because it is so important to come to the time of having to bury the body of a loved one or a friend. To be able to say, basically, I'm glad I did, instead of I wish I had. And there is one thing that I try to be sure to mention to the family member sometime during the process of a funeral and the events leading up to it. I try to always point out to those loved ones that what is left behind is just the body. And isn't that what that says here? When she was alive, she's called Tabitha and Dorcas. When she died, they washed the body and laid it. I don't know whether there was a, probably wasn't a casket as such at that time, but they prepared the body according to their custom, just like we do today. And it's called her body until she was brought back from the dead, and then it was the person again. When a person dies, the spirit or the soul goes to God. The Bible doesn't reveal to us everything about how things work between death and the judgment. There are a lot of questions asked. But there's no question about it that when death takes place, the soul departs. You go back and look at the death of Rachel back in the Old Testament, and it says her soul departed for she was dying. That's a part of what is involved. I failed to disarm my phone tonight, so we'll just disarm it and go on. I had said if that happened, I was going to say that's a call from heaven, but it's too serious tonight to do that. But anyway, I guess whoever's calling, if they knew I was preaching, thought I should be done by now, John, and maybe I should be. But anyway, it is extremely important for us to understand the relationship of the body and the soul or the spirit. The real person goes back to God. They are consistent. It's a Memphis call. I don't have any friends in Memphis, so it won't matter anyway. You have to handle whatever happens, don't you? No matter how serious you are, something unusual can happen. But back to the seriousness of it. It is important for us to understand that the body and the spirit are two distinct things. The body returns to the dust from whence it came, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 7. God made the body out of the dust, and that returns back to the dust. If nothing happens, sometime tomorrow afternoon or Tuesday morning, I will visit the cemetery where my wife is buried. I try to go by there every time I have an opportunity, but that's not where my wife is. That's just a memorial. She went back to be with God, and she continues to live in many ways. Every day, I don't go sometimes an hour without seeing things that remind me of Judy. And most of them remind me in a very positive way. There are times that there are tears, and I don't apologize for that. But there are times that I laugh, and times that I smile, and times that I think soberly as the things remind me. If we can get in proper focus, friends, and this is the gist of the whole lesson tonight, really. If we can get in proper focus the relationship of the body and the soul and realize the relationship of this earth and heaven and keep those things in focus, it can make all the difference in the world. One of these days, if you and I live long enough, we're going to stand by the casket of a loved one. And one of these days, if this earth continues, somebody's going to stand by our caskets. And we need to live in such a way that we can be reminded of good things, that we won't have some of those serious questions, and that we can sum it all up by saying, I'm glad I did. And this is basically the reason that we need to keep our lives right. We ought to go to bed each night and try to be sure that we have things right with God and with one another, because we don't know what the night holds. We don't know what tomorrow holds. We don't know what can happen. And the only way, remember this, the only way to be sure that we're ready to go is to stay ready. And I don't mean by that down on our knees praying 24 hours a day. We need to live. We need to be about the activities of life. But we need to live in a condition that we're ready whenever God decides that this life is over and we go to meet Him. If you're not ready for that tonight, you need to think about it. If you're not a Christian, you need to become a Christian. If you are one and you're living right, straighten things out. That's why Jesus came, to be our Savior and to make it possible for us to look death squarely in the face without really being afraid because of who He is and what He is. If you're not like that, come as together we stand and sing.
Well, Jesus, to you come, sir. you come, sinner come.